Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. You've been hearing throughout the program today highlights of a House Oversight and Government Reform Subcommittee on the Federal Workforce hearing from last Wednesday. The OPM Director John Barry in the first panel and some folks on all sides of the federal pay issue in the second panel, and details available about it later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. To talk about it with me now is Howard Rischer. Howard is a federal pay and benefits expert and independent compensation and performance management consultant and managing consultant for the studies that led to FEPCA in 1990. Howard, it's great to talk to you. Thanks for joining me today.
Sure thing, Francis.
What's your first takeaway from this hearing? You wrote an analysis on GovExec that we'll have linked up, but what do you, as you listen to the various sides of this going at it, what did you take away from this conversation?
Boy, it's my takeaway, I think, probably is that it's sort of sad that this thing doesn't get resolved, because it's been going on and on and on now. Just in the last year, I'm sure there's been more written about federal pay than just been anything else that pertains to federal HR stuff. But I think that one takeaway is we don't have the answers. We really don't. No one has the answers, and neither side of this equation has the answers at this point. And I think that's probably the almost an essential step. But this thing is not going to be solved until those numbers, the data, the stuff is compiled and sort of made very apparent to people out there. One of the things that I take away from this also is that I was forced to sit through courses years ago on regression analysis and how to analyze numbers kind of stuff, but relatively few people have had those courses, so this is about as opaque as anything could be at this point.
You say that there are the data is not that good, but each side thinks that its data is pretty good. So where the OPM side, the conservative think tank side, each using different information and looking at it different ways, where is each side going wrong, do you think?
Boy, what they're doing is probably inherently sound for what they're doing, that is. But it isn't really answering the question. You know, the ultimate question here is if you have, for example, a senior accountant, you like to have some numbers to say this is how much the market is paying senior accountants or chemists or engineers, whatever the job might be. And right now, neither side can produce answers like that. OPM's data was sort of piecemealed together. Not the data, the methodology was piecemealed together. When BLS changed the survey methodology back in the mid-90s, they didn't really take into account what OPM needs for its purpose. So OPM at that point for a couple of years actually refused to use BLS data. They have since put together a methodology that's unique. I've never seen anything like it anyplace else. And it really doesn't answer the question. It does produce data, and they've obviously been using it for a long time. When we hit this budget crisis, clearly it became much more sensitive at that point. Flipping over to the other side, the think tanks are using a survey that was never really used for this purpose. At least it was never used to administer pay in the past, which is really the issue. It's been a research methodology before. The numbers that they produce probably are accurate as far as they go, but they're based on some assumptions that I seriously question. One of the blatant example to me is the idea that every bachelor's degree or every master's degree is equal. The fact is that an engineer right now is starting at roughly $60,000, and if you get back to the people that are getting liberal arts degrees, it's probably in the low 40 someplace. So every degree is not equal, but their assumption is that either the degrees are equal, the years of experience, which they're sort of assuming that age is related to years of experience. Lots of questions in there.
You've written before that in every other sector, this is a simple problem. If that's the case, why is it so simple for everybody else and so hard for the government? Is it partly or entirely because of this data, or are there other things involved in the mix here too?
It's both, actually. There are one of the things about the rest of the world out there, when I say the rest of the world, and it truly is every other employer, I believe, uses what are referred to as benchmark surveys. Somebody estimated at some point, and I've never tried to verify this, but something like 2,000 surveys are conducted annually across the country. Those are local HR groups, professional groups, industry groups. Government does some of those surveys, but there's a wealth of data out there. Those are different kinds of surveys than government has been using in the past. Although, if you went back to the when I did the FEPCA stuff in 1990, OPM and BLS at that point used a benchmark survey. It was referred to as the PATSY survey, P-A-T-C, and that did have benchmark jobs in it. That's the change the BLS made was to back away from that survey. There were lots of problems with it, but at any rate, they no longer do benchmark surveys. Government at some point is going to have to get the data like that because you do, again, need data that says this is how much an accountant is paid and how much a chemist is paid, and that's the only way that could be derived is through some kind of a benchmark survey.
Let's pull back and go back to FEPCA and talk about that and the genesis there, how that process worked, that we got to that, and how the lessons there might apply to what we're looking at today.
Yeah. I wasn't involved, naturally, when it was first conceived, when the first initial planning was done, but I was involved very early on. I can't tell you how many meetings we had. But the key issue to me that came out of that, and it really was a huge learning experience for me, is that in government you need to get buy-in, you need to get the stakeholders involved. Connie Newman, who was the director of OPM at the time, asked me to make the rounds, and I can't tell you how many people I even met with anymore, the lawyers, the accountants, the this, the that. And the whole purpose was to talk about what we were doing, why it was necessary. I did meet with some people up on the Hill. We had a committee. She had a lot of people from the private sector. I mean, all the stakeholders were somehow involved in that process. And there was never any real argument about it. Although the flip side of this, which is the sort of one of those lessons learned thing, at the end, nobody actually voted on FEPCA. It was tied on to I think they're called a Christmas tree bill sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, government literally voted on basically $100 billion, and no one actually voted on it. So.
And what of that, I guess the buy-in is the primary thing that we could take away from that to apply to today. Why do you think we haven't gotten to that point yet where everybody that has a stake in this sits around a table and we hash something out?
I couldn't begin to tell you. I really, that to me is a critical question because it really is the way to get beyond where we are right now. Right now, we're at a stalemate, I think. So,
one of the things that I thought was interesting was, Chairman Ross alluded to it at the beginning of the second panel when he first started to ask his questions. Everybody seems to agree on the fact that the GS system isn't working, and a better system would be desirable for the government. That seems to be about where the agreement ends. Is that at least good news that there's some part of this to start with that people agree on?
I guess. There is agreement, I think. The only people that disagree, unfortunately, tend to be the unions. And as the comments to my column sort of suggest, a lot of employees would disagree with that as well. But that's been an ongoing issue now. I mean, I've been involved in NAPA did three studies. Looking at different pay alternatives, OPM has issued data, the Volcker Commission looked at them, all sorts of people have looked at it. They've all come to the same conclusion, it needs to be replaced. If it could be fixed, so to speak, I'm sure it would have been fixed by this point, but it just isn't possible.
One of the things that Director Barry has talked about is pay for performance, and he surprised some folks a little while back when he talked about instituting pay for performance on a wider basis across government. I don't think that some of the supporters of the president during the campaign expected that. What do you think that would look like successfully? He talked in this hearing about some of the lessons learned from NSPS. What did NSPS do wrong? You wrote about that as well, and DSIPs and some of the other programs that have come and gone when it comes to pay for performance. What did they do right and what did they do wrong?
Nobody's actually studied these things very closely. NAPA, again, did study the version of the NICCP that is used by the DOD agencies, DSIPs it's called. But nobody's really looked at NSPS very, very closely at this point. I'm not sure what they did right. There was nothing inherently obvious about it, except for the fact that employees were not able to with any certainty know what to expect. All the dollars that were being allocated went into the committees, came out with surprises too often in there, and I think that's one of the clear lessons learned is that employees have to absolutely have to know what they can expect. If you just to flip into the corporate world, the policies for allocating merit increases, as they were once called in the corporate world, defines that very closely. You know, if you were rated as a 3, you get X percent. If you're rated as a 4, you get a Y percent, et cetera, kind of stuff. So employees do know what they can expect. One of the mistakes I've been told, and again, this hasn't been studied, is that they didn't really get top management support. If you go to the corporate world again, senior executives spend a lot of time on issues like this. I mean, this is not an HR problem. This is really a management problem. But too often in government, it's been sort of categorized as an HR problem. That's an issue. I was also told, too, it goes into NSPS, that sort of at the very last minute, they decided that they had to have individual goals as part of this, and supposedly there was never really buy-in to that idea. And the evidence that I've seen is that employees and their managers have trouble defining goals. So there are issues, but it's really never been addressed very closely in there. You know, if I was making a recommendation right now, it would be to go back in depth and see why NSPS failed, and maybe go back and review some of the stuff that ODNI was doing as well.
Howard Rischer is an independent compensation and performance management consultant, my guest on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. He, like I, plowed through this entire thing. I did this hearing over the weekend, Howard, so it gives you an idea of how my weekend was.
I fortunately have better things to do than that.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. We'll talk more about it when we come back on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
The Virtualization Expert is brought to you by VMware and Carahsoft.
This is Aileen Black, Vice President of VMware Federal. With all the talk about cloud computing in the federal community, one has got to wonder, whose cloud are we really talking about? Cloud computing is changing the way IT resources are delivered, managed, and consumed. No small deal. As agencies seek agility, cost savings, security, and flexibility, the last thing you need is to get locked into a one-size-fits-all model that forces dependence on something you can't control. More federal IT infrastructure is virtualized on VMware than any other platform, because virtualization is the foundation for cloud computing. Our solutions aren't just complete, they're completely flexible, so you can build the most important cloud in the world. Your cloud.
VMware's cloud infrastructure solutions are based on its award-winning virtualization technology. That's the foundation of your cloud. To learn more, download Gartner's Magic Quadrant on server consolidation at thevirtualizationexpert.com.
Last April, 256 senior federal managers went missing. Are you next? The most successful managers know to never pass up an opportunity to learn. Join them this year to discover how to maximize your agency's forward momentum at the Federal Senior Management Conference at the Hyatt Regency Chesapeake Bay in Cambridge, Maryland, this April 10th through 13th. The Federal Senior Management Conference is the preeminent conference for senior federal managers, presented for government by government advisors, with registration open only to government employees. Register now at fedsmc.com or call 202-237-0300.
Lowering high blood pressure and cholesterol. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. More than 800,000 Americans die each year from heart disease, stroke, and other blood vessel diseases, and many of those deaths could have been prevented. One key way is by controlling high blood pressure and high cholesterol. Medication can help in many cases, but people can do a lot by themselves, as the director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Dr. Thomas Frieden, points out.
You can control your blood pressure and cholesterol by eating healthy, less salt and less fatty foods, by getting regular physical activity. Physical activity is the wonder drug. Just 20 or 30 minutes a day of walking can make a huge difference.
The issue is featured in the Vital Signs section of CDC's Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
This is Mark Amtower. I've been advising contractors for almost 30 years, and when they need agency contacts, I always recommend Carroll's GovSearch. With over 350,000 contact listings and over 1,000 government organization charts, they help you find the people you need to reach in all levels of government. Give them a try. Get a free organization chart and a sample listing from their database. Contact Gordon Peel at 703-757-8228. Carroll Publishing, bringing government to you like no other.
listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Howard Rischer is my guest on the program today. Howard was involved with FEPCA in 1990 and is writing about the pay discrepancy discussion in GovExec, and I've got that posted at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later on this afternoon. You come down kind of in between OPM and the AEI Heritage think tank folks. Why is that? Why can't you go with either side, or where are they going wrong in your view?
Let me sort of start from a slightly different premise here, if I can, and that is to say that I was surprised the other day at the hearing when Director Burry did make a reference to larger companies. I absolutely agree with that. Federal government has not done up to this point a very good job of defining its labor markets. You know, you sort of figure out who you're trying to hire, what kind of capabilities you're looking for, and clearly the people that are hiring the same kinds of people or the larger companies. That may not be the huge companies, but what I was interested to learn the other day that I went into the census, the Bureau of the Census has a census of government and a census of business and so forth in there. And there are like 6 million companies or employers in this country. And only about 18,500, as I remember the number, have 500 employees or more. I mean, the overwhelming majority of these places are very small and really have little relevance to the federal government. If we're going to have a comparability kind of an analysis, it really has to focus on the same kinds of places, same kinds of organizations that have some similarity to the federal government. Anyway, that's an issue. And when you start focusing on those kinds of companies, you really do see that federal pay, like, for example, there is an HR association in the Washington area that does a major survey. They actually have more data in their database than the BLS does in its National Compensation Survey, the NCS survey. At any rate, the federal pay then, in that context, with that specific area around Washington, federal pay is basically competitive. I mean, there really are jobs above, jobs below, but there's certainly not a 22% gap, and you certainly wouldn't find this, whatever the percentage is, each time AEI and Heritage do this, they get a different percentage. But they're certainly not well above and they're not well below. They seem to be fair, which is exactly what Director Burry said the other day. So it's really, I think, the methodologies that they're using, AEI and Heritage, the think tanks, that methodology, yes, it has been used many times by academicians, but it really is a research tool. It's never been used for a purpose like this, and it really doesn't produce answers. You know, you really, when you get done with the analysis, you don't know what you're going to do. It doesn't tell you how much federal people should be paid. It says only that they're paid more. So I don't know whether that's answering your question, but it truly is. There is so much data out there that really doesn't show either a big disparity one way or the other. Federal people probably aren't that badly paid. There's actually just the other point in there. I guess, you know, this stuff used to be highly confidential, but now there are more than a few data sites out there. One of the most prominent is a thing called salary.com. I mean, any employee in any organization could go to salary.com and get a sense of what they're being paid. Until we make this stuff transparent, we're not going to get this resolved.
I want to go to something that we talked about by email before we went on the air today, and that is the idea of pay for performance. We've touched on it a little bit in the first part of our conversation. But pay for performance, in your view, is not an HR issue at all, is it?
Absolutely not. That's one of the things that sort of jumps out at me, having lived with this stuff for a while, is that so much of what government has done has been totally sort of focused on what HR should be doing and how HR should be managing it. Realistically, HR has got very little to do on a day-to-day basis with employee performance. I mean, it really is something that supposedly the performance management process, as you might call it, goes on throughout the year. It's only that at the very end of the year, somebody's supposed to fill out a form that's essentially draws together conclusions that presumably were drawn or reached throughout the year. But that process is really a management problem at this point. And it does, unfortunately, has to start at the top. If you go to a corporation's, they really do start at the very top. One layer of management sort of leans on that next level to accomplish goals, achieve the performance plans and so forth in there. And that does cascade down. And until that happens in government, they're going to have problems with it, I'm afraid.
Our executive editor, Jason Miller, covered this hearing, and we talked to him at the beginning of the program. I got his view on what the takeaway, what the forward momentum on this might be. After you hear the conversation that you heard at this hearing last Wednesday, where do you think this is headed next, Howard?
I wish I knew. I mean, it clearly is not going to end. AEI and Heritage are not going to give this up. I would be very surprised if the Republicans on the House committees are going to let this thing lie. I mean, this has to be addressed somehow. I think I read someplace that Congressman Eisen was talking about getting GAO to do a market analysis. Somebody's going to have to do that analysis, and it's going to have to be done in a way that everybody can look at it and sort of say, yeah, that makes sense to me. This is not a science. It's certainly not very methodical. I mean, you're basically piecing together data, but it has to be put together in a way that is creditable to a broad spectrum of people.
Howard Risher, my guest on In Depth with Francis Rose today. I'm going to link up your piece on GovExec, the analysis there, so people can read it anytime they want at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Thanks for being on the program today. I appreciate your insight.
Hope I was helpful.